The worms don't have teeth. They can't hurt us. They're really here to help us. The answer to our garbage crisis and our soil mitigation is literally beneath our feet.
This is The Butterfly Effect, a podcast that shows the big impact a small action can do. Tali Orad is talking to those special people that make a difference with nature and trees.
Welcome, everyone, to The Butterfly Effect. My name is Tali Orad. I'm your host and your butterfly here. My special guest today is Kathy Nesbitt. Kathy is a worm advocate and a founder of Kathy Crawley Composters. She is on a mission to put worms in every living space, indoor composting with worms. Kathy believes worms are going to play an ever-increasing role in waste management, soil production, and therefore food security. She sees food waste as a simple way to mitigate climate change and create, air quote, black gold, to grow more delicious, nutritious food. As she says, worm composter offers a tremendous learning opportunity for all ages. Welcome, Kathy, to The Butterfly Effect.
I'm happy to be here, Tali. Thank you for the opportunity.
So worms, huh?
Why not?
Yeah, well, we'll see. So before we dive into why we need them and all their amazing benefits, their role in the fight against climate change and all those fun stuff, I have to ask, how does one wake up one day and decide to become a worm advocate?
I'm located in Toronto, largest city in Canada, and our landfill closed in 2002. When the landfill for the largest city in a country closes, it's a problem, a big problem.
Yeah.
So in Toronto, like many large urban centers, 6 million people, half living in condos, apartments, townhouses, without space for outdoor composting. And at that time in 2002, we started shipping garbage to the US. Can you imagine? Canada is a very large country, second, I believe, in the world. We could not find a new spot for a landfill. So we started exporting garbage. Like, shame on us as Canadians for shipping our garbage out of the country. Right. And sorry, but double shame on the Americans for accepting our garbage for cash. You know, it's a business transaction, and there are certainly much better ways. Can you imagine putting this wonderful resource just in the garbage? It's not garbage. Nature does not create any garbage. We do. We're the wasteful ones. So I was like, wow, I have a solution here. What I'm talking about is indoor composting with worms. Having worms in the house to manage your food scraps and your paper. And then, yes, the worms will eat both and turn it into, yes, air quotes, black gold, aka worm poo, aka fertilizer for your plants.
And not to mention reduce the amount of garbage. By the way, it's not just the amount of it, it's also very expensive. So if honestly you don't care for the environment, you should care for your buck, right?
Right. That's a perfect thing for people that don't really, you know, they're not plugged into the need to care for the planet. Think about all the tax dollars that are wasted on garbage. Like, and I say wasted because, you know, we truck it around and the optics look wonderful, like on garbage day. Oh, look at everyone playing all the games, right? The recycling game and we have an organic collection program in Canada, you know, where we take that material and either they create green energy from it through anaerobic digestion, but then you're left with, you know, tons of anaerobic sludge. You can't put anaerobic anything on the plants. The plants always require aerobic bacteria. So not just the savings of the tax dollars, the time, we can grow more delicious food, you know, just by turning this material into a plant-ready food. You know, I say that compost is great. Worm compost is greater because it's more processed by nature. And the worms will bind up any material, like any heavy metals, any toxins that are in that kind of food gets bound up in the casting, so it's not accessible to the plants. Magic.
You mentioned some of the value in composting with worms versus just composting. What is the biggest difference, obviously, besides the worms? Can we compost anything with worms versus without?
The beautiful part about worm composting, it's done inside, so it's suitable for everywhere. I already mentioned the apartment dwellers that don't have outdoor space. Mm-hmm. It's also a beautiful thing for cottage country or bear, where there's bears.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful solution for indoor. What can go in? So if you're doing it in outdoor composting, there is more options because you can put all of your scraps out there. And if you get fruit flies or if there's odor, it's fine because it's outside. Mm-hmm. So you do need to manage your indoor composter. You know, the worms are not alone in there. There's all kinds of wonderful microorganisms that are they're the heavy lifters. The worms are kind of the cleanup crew. So the little microbes, the bacteria, the springtails, mites, all of these things, and I don't want to scare anybody to not doing it, that it's those microorganisms, the beneficial bugs that do the heavy lifting. And then the worms come along and they're the cleanup crew and then just convert it into this beautiful material that can be used on our plants.
And it's any type of worm?
There are thousands of types of worms. Four have been identified for vermicomposting. Red wigglers, European night crawlers, African night crawlers, and Peryonyx. We're looking for surface dwellers. So these worms, the composting worms, live in a container.
Yes.
You know, I want people to know that they're just in a Rubbermaid container. There are systems, but you could just have any container and you add in some, you need a carbon nitrogen mix. The carbon that we use because it's indoor is shredded paper. It could be leaves, straw, cardboard, any combination of your kind of paper products or your browns. And then you add in your nitrogen, so your food scraps, which is your greens in composting, your food scraps, coffee, tea, pasta, rice, those materials. Mm-hmm. What you leave out, you don't add in meat, dairy, sauce, you know, any seasonings or anything that would be harmful to the worms. Mm-hmm. They breathe through their skin. So say salt, for example, would burn the worms.
Right.
And the meat, it's not that the worms are vegetarian, they're not. The meat and other things that, you know, cheeses and stuff would rot faster than the worms could keep up with it and then may create, you know, smelly conditions. And that's not what you want. If there's an odor in your worm bin, that means that the oxygen has been converted to methane. Like now it's starting to rot versus compost.
I see. Basically, if I'm thinking about it, it's all the food scraps that are slowly decay in a way, and obviously not processed food.
Correct. Yes. No processed food. It's just your, like, kind of if it grew, you can add it in is the basic guideline. Mm-hmm. And the more you chop it, the worms don't have teeth. So the more you chop up the scraps, the faster it breaks down, the more the worms can eat, the faster the process.
Okay. I'm honestly not a fan of worms. I'm not afraid. It's just this slimy little thing is not my cup of tea. So just thinking of something like that in my house. Do I need to go out and collect them? Do I go buy them? How does it work? I mean, it's enough thinking it's in my kitchen. But then if I need to go
and get them. And I know a lot of people think that. I've been selling worms by the pound since 2002 when our landfill closed. So, you know, like any entrepreneur, I saw a challenge. There was a problem and I had a solution. And mm-hmm. So I jumped right in. I believe that's why I was put on earth, to raise awareness about this. And when you learn about something and you see that, you know, the light bulb comes on and you go, wow, oh mm-hmm. my gosh.
Yeah.
So I was afraid of worms, and like you, I didn't think they'd hurt me. I just thought they were gross, like gross and icky.
Yeah.
And then when I started to research them, you know, they kept coming back to me. I looked after a teacher's worm bin in 1993. And as an avid gardener and compost, I knew the value of the worm compost, the poo, mm-hmm. but I didn't want to have worms in my house. So I can certainly relate to anybody that says, ew, worms in the house.
Yeah.
So that was 1993. Mm-hmm. I wanted the black gold. I wanted that for my garden as an avid gardener. And I took on the challenge. I think as people, we need to do things for ourselves. You know, people will say to you, oh, you won't like that. Oh, good. Thanks for saving me the time. Right? But if we try something, we might be like, oh, I actually, this is quite enjoyable. That wasn't my experience. I looked after my teacher friend's worm bin for the summer. Mm-hmm. At the end of the, so I had fruit flies and it was horrible because I would open the bin, throw my food in, and it does need to be managed. And I can talk about that in a moment. Mm-hmm. At the end of the summer, you know, I put on big gloves. I didn't want to touch the worms. I didn't really want to see them. It was just, and I said, I'm never doing worm composting again. So that was my first introduction.
Yeah.
And then the next time I was introduced was I got a job at a group home. I have a psychology degree. I got a job at a group home working with challenge folks. They had 10 homes and a farm and they didn't compost. So I said, wow, that was the first time I realized people don't connect what they do. This facility had 10 homes, a farm. So a lot of residents, a lot of staff, a lot of food waste and that they paid a lot of money to get rid of. So you think about grocery stores, universities, restaurants, anywhere that produces a lot of food waste, they pay a lot of money to get rid of that waste because it smells, it attracts rodents, fruit flies, right? Imagine if grocery stores did not dispose of daily their organic matter. What kind of shopping experience would that be? We'd be like dodging the mice and we'd be swatting the flies away. It would be horrible. Mm-hmm. So I said, wow, this people don't connect what they do. Now I approached this facility about doing composting and they said, hey, why don't we do worm composting? So I was like, oh my gosh, have you ever done something? Right? Yeah. Have you ever done something where you're like, nope, I'm not doing that again. But then somebody says, hey, Tally, why don't we, whatever it was that you said you're not going to do again, why don't we do that? And you're like, oh. And you get that feeling in the pit of your stomach, like, nope, this doesn't feel right. Yeah. That's what happened. And I was like, wait a minute, it's an institution. Let me start to research. So as I, for my second introduction to the worms, I went home and I started to do research. And as I researched, I was like, wow.
And what did you find?
They're small species, so they're kind of cute, like cute in air quotes. Each worm has 5 hearts, 800 to 1,000 worms in a pound. So if you bring a pound of worms into your house, that's 4 to 5,000 hearts. That's a lot of love.
Yeah.
They eat half their weight per day in food scraps. Again, if you have a pound of worms, you're looking at feeding 3 to 4 pounds of food waste per week. They will reduce the volume by about 80%.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really a magic process. And I heard when I was researching that, or I read, that a pound of worms and their descendants could transform a ton of organic waste in a year. And that the average Canadian family, so I would say a Canadian-American, similar, produces a ton of organic waste in a year. So I said, wow, every family needs a pound of worms. And I'm just the one to put a pound of worms in every space. So, you know, because of your Trillion Tree Foundation and that beautiful proverb, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Today is the second best time. That's what I say about worms. I do a lot of school workshops. I say, imagine if every classroom had a worm bin 20 years ago. Those students now would be graduating from university. They would automatically set up a worm bin in their home or That's maybe true. In their dorm and always manage their scraps. They would just know when they have an apple where the apple core goes. They would just know. So that's not the case. Here we are 19 years later, and I'm still meeting people who haven't heard of the idea.
You mentioned living it in every restaurant, in every school. I know at least for a restaurant, there are some regulation in terms of sanitation. Is that going to be a problem?
Absolutely. Okay. Right? Because we're highly regulated society. Anything, you know, anything new that you want to do, not that worms are new, they're not new. This is not a new concept. I did not invent this.
Right.
So yes, we are highly regulated. And whenever there's something that people are like, ooh, that's going to be inside, that's going to be in the restaurant. It's not going to be right in the restaurant under the table or something. It would be somewhere else. somewhere, you know, not in the purview of the restaurant people or not right in the grocery store, but in a place where they could manage their scraps on site and not have to worry about, you know, for restaurants, what a beautiful marketing strategy. Imagine if they had a giant worm bin that was insulated so they could have it maybe outside in the back alley or in the basement or somewhere that's, you know, that it's not going to cause trouble. Mm-hmm. And then they get that black gold, which is super rich fertilizer. Mm-hmm. And they brand it and they sell it back to their customers. Or maybe they give it to them and say, hey, here's some from the remnants of the food that you ate. Here's what the worms did to it. And now you can grow more food.
And can you reuse, air quote, obviously, those worms? Or do every time we need to just buy more worms?
Oh, great question. No, they will reproduce. People talk about rabbits. Rabbits have nothing on worms. But they're not cute and cuddly like worms or like rabbits.
Yes.
Here's the thing about worms. They're hermaphrodites, meaning male and female. It mm-hmm. still takes two worms to reproduce. And once they mate, the worms will create a cocoon. Up to 20 babies in each cocoon, and they both create one. So you get two eggs, one each. And in each cocoon or worm egg, there's up to 20 babies. 5 or 6 is the average. 3 weeks to hatch, 10 weeks to sexual maturity, and then every 7 to 10 days, another cocoon.
While they're working the compost.
While they're doing their great work in there, right? They're eating, they're mating, they're pooping, they're just living a life. I mean, I'm coming back as a worm.
So now that you mentioned they're reproducing even more than rabbits, it's kind of like it's a myth. Nobody knew about it. What is the one common myth about worms that you would like to debunk?
I want to debunk the idea that when you cut a worm in half, you have two worms. Just about every time that I speak, somebody's, you know, in school, one of the students will say, hey, did you know you could cut a worm in half and have two worms? So it's a beautiful thing because I have this worm puppet. I'll bring out my worm puppet and it's really big. So it's, and I'll say, the worms aren't this big, don't worry. Yeah. And then I'll show my worm just so then they can see, you know, the different parts of the worm and stuff. And I'll say, okay, so, you know, the swollen band on the worm, the collar, it's the clitellum of the worm, but it's the fat part on the worm. When the worms have that, that means they're adult worms. They're now fully developed. They're sexually mature. And that's where the cocoon is made. So that piece is always closest to the head. Worms have 5 hearts. All of their hearts are between the head and that swollen band. And so they only have 1 head, 1 tail.
Right.
You know, all those organs are closer to the head. Now, if we cut a worm in half, they have nerve endings through the whole body. So it looks like both pieces are still alive. But they're not. Worms have these beautiful lines on them. They're called annelids, and that just means segmented creature. Those beautiful lines are individual body parts. Mm-hmm. So they have very strong bodies. So if they go over a rock or an eggshell or something, they don't get cut.
Right.
So let me talk about when you have lots, really healthy soil, you may have lots of worms in your soil, like the earthworms. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you have healthy soil, when you're digging your garden, you may cut a worm by accident, right? You might be like, because it's so healthy. If a few segments get cut off the tail end of the worm, that piece will wiggle around and then it will just become part of the soil. Those 3 or 4 segments will grow back and then the worm will continue on its way. If the worm is, you know, cut too close to the head, then neither piece will live.
Back in 2017, a group of researchers discovered the waxworm and its ability to eat through common types of plastic, basically the type of plastic that's used worldwide. And I'm just curious on your thoughts on that, because it's a different, I understand now it's a different type of worm than the composting worms. Just wondering what you think.
Tali, I believe that there are so many different varieties of worms. I was excited. I also learned about that plastic eating worm mm-hmm. and how wonderful that nature has provided us with all of the cleaners. Like these are just all decomposers, you know, in the ocean, we have the catfish and the sea slugs that eat, clean the ocean floor. Mm-hmm. The worms are just one of the cleaners. They're the cleaning crew. I've done many garbage cleanup area, you know, where you go to a forest mm-hmm. and you clean up the forest because people think that it's a great place to dispose of their garbage. It isn't, people. Stop it.
Yes, please.
But when you go to those places, if that garbage has been there for some time, you actually have to unearth it because the worms and the other decomposers have started to bury it.
Okay.
They've started to break down that. I found an old bed. So just all that was remaining of that bed was the springs. Kind of, there was a bit of a frame and it was like, whoa, well, I wonder what this was. Because all of the fabric was eaten because that was natural. Mm-hmm. All of the stuffing of the mattress was taken. It was just the metal that was remaining and a little bit of the wood.
Wonderful that nature allows us to create garbage and help us take care of it.
It really is a beautiful thing. It really is hopeful. I really want people to understand how wonderful when we look at nature. I mean, the podcast name is The Butterfly Effect. We all matter. Every step we take is helping or hindering. Everything that we do is for the benefit or to the detriment to our health or to the planet. I mean, it's that simple.
Right. Right. What was the one thing that you wish people told you before you started that you can share?
When I started my worm business, I wanted to put worms in every living space, mm-hmm. right? Every house, every apartment, every classroom, every business. So we don't need to truck this stuff around. Mm-hmm. What I wish people told me when I started my business was selling worms by the pound is a kind of not a sustainable business. I've been able to sustain it for 19 years because I'm so passionate about it. A better business model for me would have been selling the compost itself because you need to reapply it, you know, maybe a couple of times a year even. Where mm-hmm. once you get worms, you asked me about worms earlier, you never have to get worms again unless something does happen, like something, you know, toxic or something gets in your worm bin and right. and kills your worms. But otherwise, they have a phenomenal reproduction. They keep on reproducing. And I want to let people know that the worms will regulate their population based on available space and available food. So it's not like, oh, they keep on reproducing, and then, wow, we have so many, wow, what are we going to do? They're taking over the house. No. Worms will regulate their population. If there's not enough food, they start dying off to make room for the babies. The babies are very resilient. Mm-hmm. So I wish people told me that, you know, instead of selling the worms by the pound, to focus on the compost. And the compost is, it's a byproduct for me. Yes, I do sell it. I don't produce enough, say, for a landscaper or, you know, I sell it in boutique volumes.
So now that we know that, let's dive into what do we need to compost? How can we do it?
For people that want to get started, any container, if someone is space challenged, pick a container that will fit in a space so you'll remember to do it. I mean, it can be right in the kitchen if you don't mind having a worm bin there, because it's aerobic, right? It doesn't smell like rotting food. It smells like maybe the forest floor after a rainy day. It's not like it's odorless. Mm-hmm, it just has mm-hmm. kind of a nice natural smell.
It's big?
No, it's maybe the size of a Rubbermaid container. It's as big as you want it to be.
Okay.
So the guideline is a pound of worms per square foot of surface because they're surface dwellers rather than depth. You don't need a big, you know, a big deep container because they're not going up and down. They're on the surface.
Okay.
And then you add in, like, say, shredded paper would be your bedding, a little bit of soil. The worms are the soil makers, but you want to add in just soil from outdoor rather than potting soil, which is sterilized. You're adding the soil for the microorganisms and the grit. Worms have a gizzard like chicken, so mm-hmm. the grit in the soil will help them process the food, and the microorganisms will help to break down. They're the decomposers.
Okay.
And then you need to add in some eggshells. Worms require the calcium for reproduction, and also the calcium will help to, or the eggshells will help to balance the pH in the bedding. Mm-hmm. You need to add enough water so it's the consistency of a wrung-out sponge. Once you get everything mixed up together, you do a squeeze test. A few drops should come out of the bedding, and then it's ready for the worms. You can add your worms right on top, and then that's your bedding. when you're feeding your worms, you pull back the bedding, add your chopped up food in the hole you've made, make sure that it's covered so you don't get fruit flies.
Okay, so you kind of like, we have our bedding, we dig a little bit in, or we mix whatever we bring in and the worms will do their job.
Yes. Yeah, so rather, remember I said when I did it with looking after my teacher's friend mm-hmm. that I had fruit flies because I would just open the lid, throw the food in and close the lid. That right. was my error. You need to bury the food in the bedding so that you don't get fruit flies. So if there's fruit flies in your house, they're not going to find their way into the bin.
Yeah.
And fruit flies, by the way, they don't cause any challenge for people. They don't carry any disease. They just bug us, right? We call them bugs. So they're just doing their job. And we bring them in. You know, people say, I don't want to have fruit flies. And I ask people, have you ever had fruit flies? Yes. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had a worm bin? No. Good. Okay. You know that the fruit flies do not come from the worm bin. They come from the food we're putting in. Yes, and I'll use yes. bananas as my example. Any fruit that you don't generally wash, but I'll use bananas. You don't wash the banana generally before eating. You just peel it and then eat the banana. Mm-hmm. The fruit flies are on the peels. So they're on the apples and the pears, but we wash them or we eat the whole thing. So something you can do, and this is something for fruit fly mitigation as well. When you bring your fruit home, your bananas, orange, melon, anything you don't generally wash, give it a quick rinse. That will wash off the fruit fly eggs and then you won't have the fruit flies.
Perfect. And then when we put the food scraps, do we need to cut it? Do we need to make it easy for them? Or can we just put the peel of banana and that's enough?
The more you chop up your scraps, the faster it breaks down, the more the worms can eat. And a better option would be to have a separate container to let those scraps start to break down a little bit first.
Okay.
So if you have a little collection bucket and you just put your, you know, I would say rinse anything you don't wash first, like your bananas, mm-hmm. chop, put it in your container, and then, you know, a couple of days, then bury it in the bedding, in the worm bin.
And how long does it take for something like that to become actual compost?
Once you're starting a new worm bin, it's the microorganisms that are in the soil that their population needs to increase for the worms to be able to do their great work. So maybe two or three weeks for that to happen. And then as the environment is optimum, your worms are established, everything is going. You just start regularly burying your scraps and everything good. So patience at the beginning. There's three key elements for successful vermicomposting. Temperature, moisture, airflow. Temperature, so Celsius, we're looking at 16 to 28. Okay. You need to have holes in the bin. You can't have a solid bin, otherwise your worms won't be able to breathe. So air holes in your bin. A moisture, about 70% humidity.
Can we put the bin outside?
Your bin can be placed outside spring, summer, and fall. If you are going to put your bin outside during that time, you don't want to have holes in the roof or in the lid, because if it rains and you're not there, then your worm bin will get too wet.
Yeah.
Now, for people that don't want to have just a Rubbermaid container, there are many systems on the market. We have a beautiful one called the Living Composter. Mm-hmm. And this one is a tower. The tower composters are beautiful thing. You're usually feeding one tray at a time. It's exactly the same as a Rubbermaid container, except it has a couple of beautiful features. It will help you manage moisture. It doesn't matter if it gets too wet, because gravity will take the excess moisture down to the bottom tray, which is a collection. It's just a collection base, mm-hmm. and there's a little tap right at the bottom so you can drain out any extra moisture. If that material doesn't smell, you can use that to water your plants and have liquid fertilizer. So that's one of the beautiful benefits. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to manually harvest. So people that are afraid of worms, or they don't want to touch the worms, they're like, I would love to do this, but I don't want to be hands-on with the worms, right? I don't want to be friends with them. When the tray fills up, there's holes in the bottom of each tray. So you place your new tray on top with your mm-hmm. new bedding, and then you start feeding upstairs. The worms will migrate up through the holes, and then they leave behind their black gold. About another month or so, you take out that bottom tray. Very few worms. If there's any, you just put them upstairs, and then you've got your soil ready to feed your plants.
And how do we harvest if we don't have that special compost bin, that tower?
So if you don't have a system like the Living Composter or one of the other systems where mm-hmm. they self-harvest, if you have a Rubbermaid or a single container, you do need to dump it, yes.
Yeah.
You would spread out a tarp or a plastic sheet and dump your container out. Put it in small round piles. The worms don't like the light. They're photosensitive. So they will go down into those piles. And then you just scoop off the top, scoop around the sides. You're taking off the compost and the worms will continue going down. So the smaller your little piles, the faster the harvest.
So harvesting like that is definitely not for me, even though I know they mean no harm and they are super beneficial for us.
The worms don't have teeth. They can't hurt us. They're really here to help us. The answer to our garbage crisis and our soil mitigation is literally beneath our feet.
Yeah. Kathy, before we are moving on to talk about, to hear your favorite tree, I would like to hear your tips and thoughts and inspiration to our listeners.
I really would just like to encourage everyone to either compost or worm compost. It really is one thing that we can all do. We all eat food. So we do have food waste. And if we can take that food waste and compost it, that's one contribution to help mitigate climate change.
Mitigation on climate change, you mean in terms of reducing the amount of garbage we have?
I mean the amount of garbage, but the organic matter in particular, once it's rotting, that's when it smells, and that smell that we smell is gas. It's methane gas, one of the most powerful greenhouse gases that we know of, mm-hmm. methane. And so if we can convert that, like not even create the methane, right? We don't allow the scraps to rot, we compost them instead. Composting is not rotting. Mm-hmm. Your compost should never smell like rotting food. If it does, you need to add some air in there. It's too wet. There's something has happened that has converted that material to methane instead of oxygen.
Yes. So if you guys are thinking of how you can help the environment besides planting a tree, start composting.
Yes.
What is your favorite tree?
My favorite tree is, and I happen to have one in my yard, is called an elderberry tree. Elderberry is one of those very nutrient-rich berries. It's a native tree to North America. Mm-hmm. And it's got this beautiful purple berry, and you can make this syrup. So if you feel a cold or a flu or any of those kind of winter ailments, mm-hmm. you take some of that at the first sign, and it's delicious, it's wonderful. And the tree is so beautiful. It's got these wonderful white flowers at the beginning. The birds love it. I have to actually battle the birds when I want to collect the berries so I can make my syrup.
Thank you, Kathy, for sharing your love and appreciation to worms with us. And I hope you guys learned a few tricks on how to compost. And I hope Kathy inspired you. So thank you, Kathy, for that.
Oh, Tali, I'm so grateful. The butterfly effect. I love it.
And thank you, everyone, for joining me today. We are all beautiful butterflies, each in his and her individual ways. I wanted to thank you for joining me today in this episode. I really appreciate you coming on this journey with me, and I hope you can join me next time. And remember, it only takes a small action to make a big difference. Be a butterfly.
And that's all for this episode. Thank you for joining us today. Please subscribe to hear more of our stories of change.